Welcome to Yacht Crew Vlogs, where we tell the stories of those in the yachting industry. A behind-the-scenes look that discovers the individuals in the industry, their history, their passions, and what inspires them to do what they do.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest, Kevin Judkins. He is coming to us out of New Zealand. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you very much, and a pleasure to be here.
Well, and the reason we have you on here today is with the situation around the world, it's been very difficult to get people in and out of places. We do the crew travel every week and we know that things are constantly changing, but you're coming to us out of New Zealand and there is a massive issue in New Zealand and you are championing that cause because seafarers seeking repatriation have been having an awfully difficult time of it. Could you please explain to the audience exactly what it is that you've set out to do?
I'm a group of three or four seafarers. I'm a master mariner. The other two are marine. One's a marine engineer. One's a geologist on a seismic vessel. We're just trying to lobby the government to change the policy in place to allow seafarers and fly in, fly out the people of all the job descriptions. Easy access to the MIQ system, which is the system which allows people to come into quarantine, into New Zealand under 2-week quarantine. At the moment, that's virtually impossible to do because there's limited spaces and people with poor internet can't get allocation on the online booking system.
Well, it's my understanding that it's almost like a lottery. It's like a first come, first serve type idea. And of course, when we're talking about seafarers, it doesn't matter whether you're on a large ship or whether you're on a yacht, you don't always necessarily know when you're going to be able to get home. And you might only have 2 weeks. So for you to plan 2-3 months in advance and get yourself on the roll or keep an eye on that sort of lottery, as it were, it's impossible.
That's right, and also a lot of from my perspective on cargo ships, that the ship owner doesn't book and pay for the ticket until probably 1 or 2 days before you're due off. So the system that is enabled at the moment is even if you did were lucky enough to get something on your lottery that you would right, I've got that date. Well, the ship owner is not going to pay for a ticket 8 weeks in advance. So and also the circumstance could change. Might not be in port on the day that you're scheduled to be in port, so it's virtually impossible for a seafarer to comply with the requirements of the booking system as it is at the moment.
So what specifically do you want to change about this? Do you want them to set aside a certain amount of places for quarantine for seafarers or make some exceptions? What exactly are you asking the government to change?
Well, under the Maritime Labour Convention, to which New Zealand is a signatory, all governments are required to assist seafarers to get in and out of countries. In March of this year, the New Zealand government, Maritime New Zealand, advised the New Zealand government that there was no requirement to assist New Zealand seafarers overseas, which is totally contrary to the words of the Maritime Labour Convention. So what the New Zealand government did, they set up what's called a maritime allocation, which is 60 bunk spaces, 60 hotel rooms, and that was purely reserved for seafarers coming into New Zealand to join a ship. So say Russian, Filipino commercial seafarers coming into New Zealand, they would be required to quarantine in New Zealand and before joining a ship. That's since been bent quite significantly in that now overseas seafarers can come into New Zealand and they don't have to do the 14 days quarantine. And as a result, there were some infected seafarers came through New Zealand and joined a ship infected. So that they've bent the rules detrimentally, but they won't bend the rules to allow New Zealand seafarers back into the country.
See, that doesn't make any sense. And this is probably what your biggest argument is this is their home. This is where they have to go out to work because they are seafarers. That is the nature of their business. When you're in maritime, you have to be where the boat is. Yet they do have certain times off and they should be able to come home because if they have that time off, and they're not able to come back to New Zealand, they're going to be stuck somewhere. And more often than not, they're going to be stuck on their own dime.
That's exactly correct. There's a young lady in East Coast USA that's desperately trying to get home. She's recovering from COVID Delta. She's a stewardess on a yacht, and she's got to go through all kinds of hoops. She should get through under what's called a 1A, which is emergency repatriation for health, but she shouldn't have to go through that those hoops that she's going through at the moment. Likewise, there's a captain and two marine engineers on a ship in Singapore that are trying to get back to New Zealand. The ship was initially chartered to go back to Australia. That charter has since been cancelled, and they're due to get off in Singapore, and they've got nowhere to go. So it's just absolutely appalling.
And is there no help for them out there? Is, you know, iSwan, that kind of thing, is there nobody there that can actually, you know, make sure that they are taken care of? Or is it not the ship's responsibility to repatriate them back to where they came from? I mean, there's just so many variables, isn't there?
Yes, under the law, it's actually the captain's and the ship owner's responsibility to repatriate the seafarers, and that's quite standard. It's always been the case. But now, New Zealand says it's complying with the Maritime Labour Convention, but then they are preventing the captain and the ship owner from carrying out their legal requirements by preventing that seafarer being able to re-enter his own country. So in effect, they're putting a roadblock in place to stop the companies and the captain undertaking their legal obligations.
Now, I'm sure that you've been in touch with a lot of people that are in this situation. What is the longest time frame of any of these people that they have been away from New Zealand and haven't been able to get home?
There's a geologist I'm in contact with. He's been taking his leave in Las Palmas, I understand, and he's working in Mauritania. He hasn't been home for almost a year. Someone else has been away for over a year. They were away when COVID came in, and that was part of their plan, and then they tried to get back. So their plan to be away for a year, whatever, then that's blown out to 18 months. So it's taken an emotional toll on an awful lot of people, not just those that are at sea, but their families as well.
Now, let me ask you, though, even if they do manage to get in, they are, by law, they have to do a two-week quarantine. They have to pay for that themselves, don't they?
At this stage, yes. Although if they were out of the country, I think it was on August the 6th last year, then they don't have to. So prior to August the 6th last year, there was no payment required. But if you left New Zealand after August the 6th, last year, then you are required to pay it. It's in the vicinity of 3,000 New Zealand dollars.
And that's regardless of whether or not they have to go to work. So you, basically the government is saying you can stay here and remain unemployed, or you can go out to work. But when you come back, you have to pay 3,000 of your hard-earned New Zealand dollars in order to get back home, if you manage to get back home.
That's exactly right, and there's many of the people that the fly in, fly out people. They've got this big choice to make. Do they continue to work overseas, pay tax in New Zealand, and have a lottery to get back, or do they quit? In essence, I'm a COVID-induced early retirer because I've decided I don't want to go back overseas. And quite frankly, a lot of employers now are refusing to employ New Zealanders because they know that there's an issue of repatriation.
And that's not good for the New Zealand government because seafarers pay a lot in tax. I mean, there's quite a significant amount of tax money that goes back into the country as a result of these people working overseas. And New Zealand is known as a country that has a very strong seafarer population. You would think that they would take a look at that and think, you know, sort of weigh it out personally.
Yeah, I agree. Common sense would dictate that. They Maritime New Zealand gave some very, very poor advice to a government department, and that government department then forwarded that advice to the government, which subsequently became policy. These documents were released under the Official Information Act, and I'm in close liaison with the Deputy Director of Maritime New Zealand, who was not involved in the decision-making process at the time. My understanding is that she's not very impressed with the advice that her department gave to the government, and the government is refusing to go back and reassess that advice and rescind their marine orders.
Well, if people want to help, if people want to help make a change, what is it that they can do to help you push this further?
Well, we've been trying to push the IMO to assist us, but everybody that's lobbied the IMO has received the same cut and paste letter that I received in March this year. Basically, the IMO just sitting on their hands doing, you know, sucking a salary and doing nothing. We're trying to lobby the government through the Human Rights Act, Human Rights Commission in New Zealand, to say that seafarers are being unfairly discriminated against because being at sea with a low-speed internet connection have no chance of obtaining winning the lottery and getting a date compared with some people on ultra-fast broadband or those that are using bots to pick their dates. Challenging Maritime New Zealand in the fact that their decision to the government was illegal and incorrect. There's a law firm in Nelson that's looking at, they've got all the information and they're coming up with an opinion, which I hope they'll come up within a week or so, whether there's a legal challenge to the government's stance. And that legal challenge will be under the Maritime Labour Convention.
Well, I have to say one thing that I have learned over the past few years is that seafarers are very, very often overlooked, and we wouldn't have everything that we have if it weren't for seafarers around the world. And they go out in the container ships. We wouldn't have toilet paper to go crazy over when this pandemic first started if it weren't for seafarers the world over. They need to have more respect. They need to be looked after better. And we need to pay attention and make sure that, like any other job, any other anything that people do, whether land-based or at sea, when their time comes for them to go home, they should be able to go home.
Absolutely, I agree entirely. And I guess it came to the fore when the Ever Given went aground in the Suez Canal. All of a sudden, there was a big panic. Oh, world trade is going to be disrupted. And then there was the realization of how important the seafaring industry is to the world economy. And once that problem solved, then all of a sudden it's out of sight, it's out of mind, and people just expect that there'll be product on the supermarket shelves, and the latest electronic equipment will be there, or cars will be on the lot. Shipping, the world commerce revolves around shipping. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I don't even think when that happened in the canal, I don't even think people actually thought about the people on board. They were just talking about the ship itself. And that's the problem, is that people aren't thinking about the fact that that ship would not exist if it weren't for the souls on board. And we all have to, you know, pay a little closer attention. I know that we talk a lot about yachties. We talk a lot about the issues with yachties. But there's a whole huge industry out there that isn't yachting. There's hundreds of thousands of people on the sea on a daily basis, making sure that we are able to live.
Absolutely. Now, this is new to me. So I'm not part of the yachting community. I am part of the commercial side of it, with a background in oil and gas industry. So I've got quite a diverse professional background. I've only ever been on one super yacht. That was in West Haven in Auckland. A colleague of mine showed me around. It was the Prancing Here, Dancing Here, I think it was. And it was not big by super yacht standards, but I was blown away how flash and nice it was. It's not quite the same as being on a semi-submersible drilling rig, but they had the same challenges in life, same emotional ties, wanting to get back home, and so in effect, we're all the big family like that, and that incorporates guys on dive support ships. I'm in close contact with a subsea dive, deep sea diver. He's desperately trying to get back from the North Sea back to New Zealand, but then he wants to then fly back to work in October. So you can pull an emergency under the current legislation. You can pull an emergency allocation once, but the government in their official Information Act, there's no way they would grant that same person a second emergency get back if they were just rostered on a fly-in, fly-out basis.
Well, do you have a petition that people can sign, or a place that people can go to find out more information or find out what they can do to help?
There's unfortunately there's two change org petitions in parallel, which is unfortunate that they're both very similar, but the government's very much not going to change. They're totally dogmatic, and I understand where they're coming from. They're trying to protect the majority of New Zealanders, and I've got to give them 10 out of 10. They're doing a very good job at that. So I don't want to bag the government on their performance of quarantine New Zealand. Yeah, we're
well, a safe little island. Sorry to interrupt, but one thing I do have to say, and I do concur with you there, is that out of every government on the face of the planet, I really do have to say New Zealand probably did the best job from day one out of every government on the face of the planet when it came to this pandemic. But no government is perfect, and we are seeing the results for seafarers here.
Yeah, yes, indeed. So we're an overlooked community, unfortunately. The government has done really well. If you look at the only 5 million and they've kept us all safe and rolling out the quarantine a bit slower than other countries, but there's not the urgency that we have that other countries have. But it would be nice if they just took they've taken heed of some industries like Air New Zealand. They were very, very lucky that the airline pilots and Air New Zealand had the same focal point and they had a direct route into government. So the poor poppets there, you know, they were objecting to 72 hours quarantine because it was stressful and they'd been away for 5 days. And I thought, well, harden up, princess. You know, you go on a ship for 6 months, and then do. Last year, I did 70 days in quarantine, and it wasn't too onerous. I mean, I did have access to alcohol, so it was always beer o'clock whenever I wanted. But the fact that pilots and trolley dollies could get the government to bend their rules to suit them, because they had a single point employer, a single point union focus. And it was Air New Zealand's quite a significant player in New Zealand industry. So they had that, whereas the marine industry doesn't have that same single point employer, doesn't have the same single point focus of the number of employees, and the government is totally unaware of how many people are employed in the as mariners at sea and right across the broad spectrum of vessels. So Maritime New Zealand stated there was only probably 200 people affected, whereas I've been told anecdotally it's about 4,000, and then you put their families on top of that, so there could be 10 to 12,000 people that are really emotionally affected at the moment.
Well, if you can provide us with any links that you have, we'll make sure to air them or place them below this interview when it airs, just in case people may have a story to tell.
Thank you very much, Rhea.
I'm going to redo that again. I'm going to edit this out. I had to clear my throat. We are going to include any links that you may have when this interview airs, just in case maybe somebody has a story to tell, or they may need your help, or they may be trying to get home. We'd love to include all your information and any way that people can help.
Well, thank you very much. I maintain a database of personnel across all broad spectrum of marine industry, and I update them on a regular basis. I send emails out of where we're at, what's happening. And a lot of them are very, very thankful that even if not much is happening, at least they know that someone's keeping them up to date. After the interview, I'll give you my email address, and you can feel free to promulgate that through. I'm available on LinkedIn. My email address appears on my LinkedIn profile. And also, I'm on Facebook as well, so people can contact me on Facebook. And then what I do, I add their email addresses to my database and email them out. I don't share that data with Maritime New Zealand or Inland Revenue or the press. Although if people come to me with assistance, they're begging for assistance to get an MIQ voucher, then I have to share their details with Maritime New Zealand. So what I'm endeavouring to do is work with the Deputy Director of Maritime New Zealand to set up a de facto marine allotment of about 30 bunk spaces if we can, to get mariners in. Initially, those will be the emergency cases, and then as the emergency cases trickle down, than those that are just want in on a normal roster, fly-in, fly-out rostered basis. But I don't know when that will occur. I've been advised that she's hoping to have some kind of formal system in place within the next week to 10 days. But at the moment, we're setting up something informal to get it going. Feel a little bit like we're in occupied France trying to smuggle Allied airmen out of France or back to the UK.
Or like a Canadian who's, trying to bootleg booze into the US.
Yes, exactly right.
Right. Well, Kevin, I have to say thank you very much for the information. And I would encourage any New Zealanders out there, whether, whatever position you may have, if you are, as Kevin said earlier, if you are being paid to float anywhere on water, and you're from New Zealand, then I would definitely encourage you to get a hold of Kevin, get his information, because you never know. I mean, at some stage, it might be a matter of sending out an email to all of these email addresses saying, we need names and we need you to bombard so-and-so or whatever. It's just nice to get all that information into one place and to really be able to prove to the government that there isn't just 200 seafarers out there waiting to get home, that there is a large group of seafarers that amounts to far more than 200 people.
Thank you very much. That's exactly right. And it was very, very, it's an eye-opener to me how many New Zealanders are employed in the super yacht industry. I really wasn't aware of this until I became involved in this campaign. And then all of a sudden I was getting an avalanche of emails from people that include me in your database. Thank you very much. Your email was forwarded from somebody else. So the word is getting out there and that's very good. And I'm happy that people spread my newsletters out amongst their fraternity and their friends and just hoping for a change.
Well, let's help you make that. You have been watching or listening to Kevin Judkins. He is spearheading a movement to get to the New Zealand seafarers seeking repatriation, the availability for them to get home again. We will provide the details. As I said, you've been watching another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs. My name is Rhea. I've been your host. Please tune in again.